Do you know how many people listen to our podcast?
40.
40, okay.
Ooh. I sound high.
Oh, you think you're high?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you're low.
Oh.
We talk all the time about being transparent, and I realize this is something we've never talked about on the show or with you, because if you remember from last year, Mark doesn't have access to a lot of things, so he doesn't look at the analytics. Analytics for podcasts are really hard to track. It's not like YouTube where it's like, now that our podcast is now on YouTube and you can listen on YouTube, just the audio only, the analytics is crazy. Like you can look at an episode and see where people give up, where they stop listening or how far they get. You can see that, you know, only 11% of the people who started the episode even finish. It's neat.
It sounds sad.
I mean, I just made up a number.
Oh.
But it might be right. Might be high.
Okay, so if not 40, 90.
A little higher.
110.
I think it's somewhere around 120.
Okay.
I think it's a little inflated because I think my mom listens like 4 times and then I download on 2 different devices. So I think 120 is about right.
I'm Hunter Pence and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't follow Board Game Casual's recommendations and buy a dice rolling tray. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. And Mark, I can't stop playing Can't Stop. I love the simplicity of this game, and I've made you play with me. It's a dice rolling game where you are trying to press your luck and roll certain number combinations until you can get to a certain point, and then you can stop. I didn't buy a copy off Amazon and I just made it at home. And I don't know if I'm breaking an unwritten rule or not, but I've been playing Can't Stop at home because the Amazon copy for some reason is $40 and there's not a lot to it. I can just play with some meeples and I created a board.
I'm not allowed to say meeples.
Yeah, that's right. But you don't need much. But I feel like I've been talking about Can't Stop so much in Discord, on Blue Sky, on the podcast, that like this is free advertising. I think we're even Stevens here. But I need a dice tray because I've been rolling the dice on the table and they're just going everywhere and it's loud. So I really need a dice tray is my point.
How high are you throwing them from?
It's not too high, but you know, I got a little flick to my wrist. I want a good roll. You don't want just like set them down. That's not fun playing games. Like just shaking your hand and like setting it down. You gotta give it a little roll. I don't have a big table. They roll off.
That's not a feeling that I'm really chasing in my gaming. How the dice feel when they leave my hand.
Oh no, that's a thing.
Not for me.
There's some people in team who don't even want dice in our game.
I'm pretty anti-dice in Animal Kingdom.
Okay. Today on our show, we're going to be talking about our very first of the season. So our very first Animal Kingdom playtest this year. We also have a misplay of the week and quotes from the notes. I like saying that. That's why it's there.
You like a good rhyme? Yeah, you like a good rhyme.
Before we get into that, today's episode is sponsored by Rebel Raptor Games. Rebel Raptor Games is an indie board game publisher focused on making games that are perfect for kids and new players, but are just as fun for seasoned gamers. Their first game, Raising Rabbits, launches on Kickstarter in March. Follow them on Instagram at rebelraptor.games or visit rebelraptor.com to join their mailing list for exclusive updates. Misplay of the week, brought to you by Rebel Raptor Games.
Best bumper you've ever done.
Thank you.
You may be playing Can't Stop. I've been sick and playing Balatro.
Yes.
So, are you familiar with The Mouth? It's one of the boss blinds. It's the one that says you must play the same type of hand for the whole hand.
Yes, okay.
So, I'm playing a Flushes deck that is going pretty well.
Now, let me ask you, 95% of my games are Flushes deck. Is it because I'm a beginner?
I don't know. I still force it probably more than I should. I also like Full House and Two of a Kinds.
Okay.
But I was playing flushes with a deck that I hadn't played with very much and had my deck pretty well set up. I think I was in the fifth ante. Get to the boss blind. It's same hand for the whole ante. I coincidentally drew a straight flush and a flush and like selected my cards and was like, oh, I can play a flush. And then I saw the straight flush.
I know where this is. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'll just play the straight flush. It scores big. It's fine. Play the straight flush. Look at the boss rules.
Yeah.
When I play my next flush, I never hit another straight flush. Game over, man. It was brutal.
All of our misplays could be Bellatro for the next year. I feel like I have so many mistakes in that game. There's just so many things that you can do wrong.
I think the hard part for me with Bellatro would be, I don't know what the misplays are because I just don't have a solid enough understanding.
Math.
It hurts my head.
I want to say it. You want to say it at the same time?
Sure.
Quotes from the notes.
That was good.
So the idea with this segment is we have a weekly meeting with the team, anywhere between 4 and 7 of us, and we take notes. Like, it's official. In fact, this week's notes say Jason was only there for 5 minutes. It's in the notes.
It's true.
I had a prior engagement this week.
Very important one.
And it was really great because I got to go back through the notes. I was reading the notes to see what I missed this week. And it allows me to catch up. It allows me to see what people are thinking about the game or, you know, the business related things that we're doing in the background as well. And I just had this idea that quotes from the notes sounded cool and it could be something we talk about on the podcast. And you selected a quote from the notes this week.
Hippo cards have been very controversial in the early stages of developing Animal Kingdom. I'm so bad kind of identified in the original version of the game where each player would take a turn, collect some things, and then the next player would take a turn. Hippo cards were a sore thumb to I'm so bad because if you wanted to undo what the other person had done, you're essentially just like hating on one person and not progressing your game plan. So in our first playtest, I'm so bad kind of identified hippo cards are terrible things to play and he didn't play them throughout the game. Watched all of us and laughed and won the game easily. But hippo cards are something that Jason feels very strongly about being in the game. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. So Mark and I, we've been talking about where the game is currently at. And I have said to Mark several times that I'm hoping the game completely changes. It can be something radically different than it is right now, but hippo cards should still be in the game. I really like the hippo cards. I really like that they are a form and they have a play on, it's kind of a pun with opposition, hippo, oppo, opposition being things you play on your political opponents to kind of sabotage them, right? That's what they call it in political lingo. Oppo, hippo, and hippos in nature are very aggressive and it fits perfectly. It's the only thing I want in the game.
So we've been trying to problem solve for how to make hippo cards useful or have some utility or have be a modal thing that doesn't pigeonhole you into just ruining somebody else. At one point, somebody had the idea of, well, what if hippos were counterspells? To which our quote from the notes comes from. I absolutely hate that idea. Counterspells are the least fun thing you can do.
I'm so bad.
I'm so bad is one of our playtester developers who probably has the widest breadth of gaming experience. I think he plays the most games. He spends probably the most time thinking about games. He's done a little bit of amateur design by himself. He has a friend group that he plays with and plays their games. He's one of the people who joined the Board Game Initiative through being part of the Eternal team.
One of the things I'll say about I'm So Bad is I don't think he's missed a playtest anywhere, and I'm not just talking about Animal Kingdom. I'm So Bad has been playtesting all of the games that we've been putting forward. Not only that, he's playtesting community games. Mike C. has been working on his game Plunder for several months and playtesting it on weekend nights. I'm talking like midnight East Coast time, where I'm so bad, is he hasn't missed one of those. He's been playing Plunder with Mike and giving feedback. And Mike has found that feedback so critical to his development of his game. So I'm so bad's participation has been fantastic.
He's definitely the playtesting workhorse.
And he's known for saying some things.
Strong opinions.
Strong opinions.
Which is good when you have creative people with strong opinions. It pushes ideas, pushes on and pushes back on ideas that need further inquiry.
So the quote is, "I absolutely hate that idea. Counterspells are the least fun thing you can do." Do you believe that to be true?
I don't, but I'm a glutton for punishment.
I mean, I love counterspells. I'm a control player in Magic.
We should clarify, when we say counterspells, we're talking about the idea in Magic the Gathering where a player plays a card and you play a card that says this card doesn't happen. How would you as project manager address or guide us in the challenge of this idea of this mechanic is not fun? Where would you point to next?
Well, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes in our first playtest, we didn't playtest with Hippo cards. Even though I love them, I want them in the game, I like counterspells, I like reacting to people, I like them thinking, you know, does Jason have a card in his hand that could disrupt me? And as project manager, I feel it's my role to test it. So in the last version that we played, we didn't use them. We didn't use Hippo cards. That wasn't the only reason, but I'm willing to say, okay, let's try it without it and see what that feels like.
Hippo cards, to be continued.
Where are we?
We completed our first playtest of the new version of Animal Kingdom that we've been working on. We played a four-player game on playingcards.io, and we had two primary objectives with this version and this playtest. The first one was to test the simultaneous turn that we'd been discussing in our brainstorming sessions.
I'd like to point out that Mark just did air quotes around simultaneous for the podcast audience.
Helps with the inflection.
Okay. You're right. It does. It does. I'm with you.
I talk with my hands.
I'm with you. I'm just providing a window. So the first goal was simultaneous turns.
And the second goal was to check and work through the proposed resolution order of hard and soft stances. Hard stances were lines that players could take that strongly moved voters to their likely or leans pile and marked their character as having taken that stance.
And they pulled from other people as well, hard stances.
Yes. Soft stances are more flexible. They were designed to be able to be changed in this version of the playtest, and they could only draw voters from the center.
So I want to paint a little bit of a picture for the audience and give some context. If we go back to our playtest, our original playtest last year, there was a sequence that we knew we didn't like. It was not a good player experience. So the way the rounds worked, everybody took their own individual turn in a round in an order. So first player plays a card, and let's say they draw all the swimming animals in front of them. Then the second player plays their turn and steals a couple of the swimming animals. The third player plays a hippo card, and so two more of the swimming animals in front of the first player go away. And then player four plays a stance, and now all of the swimming animals come to player four. So player one has taken their turn. They thought it was a good move. It was powerful. They took six things in front of them. But by the end of the round, there's nothing left in front of them. They don't have anything. And it's just a bad experience. The round is over. They have nothing to show for it. That's not how we want the game played. Meanwhile, player four got to react to everything that has happened, and they have the benefit of already knowing what the other players are going to do. And so they're not affected. So as an alternative, we tested playing our cards for this playtest at the same time. For simplicity, we did remove Hippo and wild cards for the playtest because, as Mark said, we just wanted to understand how hard stances and soft stances would now work in relation to each other.
So the revised solution for how players selected their move for the turn and revealed was we came up with everybody selected their move at the same time. So every player would select what their move was going to be, whether they were playing a hard or a soft stance in this case, put it face down in playing cards. And then when everyone was locked in, we would reveal. After everybody was locked in and revealed, we would go through the resolution phase. The game was designed to resolve in this playtest where hard stances would resolve first, and then soft stances that didn't change would resolve, and then soft stances that changed would resolve last. We kind of ran into a hiccup. We wound up needing a turn order, or an order for player operations when...
Stack.
When resolving stances that were competing for things. So whether it was I took a hard stance on swimming and Jason took a hard stance on climbing, bad example, but whatever crossover there would be between swimming and climbing animals, Jason and I would be competing for.
I'm trying to think if anybody, yeah.
Who swims and climbs? Dogs? Bears?
Oh, yeah. Crossover. So who got the bear?
Well, that's where we needed a player turn order because competing hard stances were essentially chop the pot. And so when one player would have to select which voter was coming to them, we started to need a player order because we couldn't just have everyone flip their cards and free for all grab the voters because there were conflicting stances of who takes what when. So the reveal was simultaneous, but there was a turn order in selecting how voters were allocated.
The first time we all flipped over our stances, we're like, well, who goes first? How do you do this? And there were some good discussions with the team to try to figure out who should go first. Should it be, you know, there's a token that moves around. A lot of games have this, a first player token, and it moves around throughout the game. There could also be, well, it's by, you know, whoever has the least amount of voters banked. Like that could be an alternative way to do it. Because I don't love the idea of passing a token around and be like, whose turn is it first? Okay, you get to do that first. I want less little things in the game like that we have to manage. Because I think just for like a millisecond, it takes away a little bit of the fun. Mark's pondering. Create strategy, right? If you know you're going to be... It's the same way poker players play. You play based on position and not necessarily your cards sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. How many games do you play where you have that floating token? I feel like it's almost a standard practice in games.
It is. There's quite a few that I can think of that have it.
That might be something we have to come back and discuss as a team later, because that is what we ended up on. We wound up with the player marker that moves every turn as the deciding factor, because we needed to make a decision in that moment because we needed to unbreak the game so that we could complete the playtest.
I like that term, unbreak the game. So that conflict also happened when we had soft stances as well. One of the things that we had to try to do with soft stances for this test, I am still of the mind that when you play your soft stance card, it's blank, there's nothing on it, it just says soft stance. You shouldn't have to say what your stance is until it's your turn. But we were trying to create a world where if you stuck with it, then you were rewarded in some way. Like there was a benefit. And what we ended up coming with was if you don't change your soft stance, then you can go first. Then you have first pick. And so what we had to do when we played soft stances is we had tokens that we would then set on top of it at the same time.
Yeah. So the largest success coming out of this playtest was the refining of the simultaneous reveal and the resolution order. And that was really what we were setting out to accomplish. I mean, I guess then we moved into our debrief, right? So everyone got a chance essentially to go through and speak to the two goals that we had for the playtest in terms of the resolution order and how it played out. And
this was formalized, by the way. Mark had created little boxes in the notes for us to go in and fill out. This was one of the 7 Mark Katz steps for playtesting.
It is part of our playtest practice protocol. Procedure.
I think that was the word we used. Throwback to season 1.
But so everyone got to share and reflect on those two questions and then share any additional thoughts that we asked players to hold off, because we really do want to make sure that our playtests are focused on the questions that we're trying to address. But we also didn't want to shoot down ideas or things that needed to be addressed in other areas. And so that's what the after...
You had a second box for that.
Did I?
You did. There were 2 boxes. I'm going to go to my notes because I haven't read them since I wrote them. This was a few weeks ago. So in my box, I had written, game is more interesting. Planning out turn ahead of time becomes interesting. the social deduction element comes out and played in the strategy. Simultaneous, in quotes, turns make sense. Resolution order, soft stance became a lot weaker. Hard stances carried the day in this reduced version. So we only played a few rounds. So it was clear, though, that hard stances were still quite powerful. I was really worried about that. I remember the first time I saw in the notes that we were going to have hard stances resolve first, and I go, man, that feels like a nerf, because I want you to make your soft stance play, and then my hard stance pulls it away from you. Ha ha! But probably too powerful.
And that was something that Peter addressed in his feedback and comments from the playtest also. He wondered how a longer game would have affected how aggressively people played their hard stances, since I don't think we played more rounds than there were hard stances in hands, and we weren't playing with a way to add more cards to your hand in this playtest. I'm so bad really liked the simultaneous reveal and after the troubleshooting of the turn order worked out. Did feel that there were other things to explore if we wanted to, but that this solution worked well.
I always like Scott's notes. One of the things that Scott said was, how much does this resolution slow things down? It feels like a lot of tedious figuring things out, but maybe it's a net positive versus sequential turns. How much does intentionally picking slow the game down? Because what was happening was we were like, okay, so it's my turn to go and I get to pick climbing animals, but there's five with climbing traits. Mark has said that he's going to grab nocturnal animals. So I should actually find a climbing animal with nocturnal and pick that first, because then Mark can't take it from my pool. So there was a lot of like, okay, what am I going to do? He's doing that. They're doing that. Okay, I should, which one makes the most sense for me to grab first? I can remember a misplay I made in the game where I pulled the wrong animal, essentially. Like, it would have still been available to me at the end of the round because nobody else could pull it, whereas I should have taken something from somebody else.
Just to clarify a little bit of the description about why we were selecting these voters between players. When there were stances that were competing with each other, this is that turn order piece, right? So the first player who had the opportunity to go first would select theirs. It was part of the resolution process. And so Scott is looking at that as that piece for time, right? My personal biggest takeaway was there's still too much information on the cards. I think 19 traits is too many by a lot.
Peter said the same thing. I'm looking at Peter's notes. We'd like to have far fewer traits, maybe 7.
Yep. I think we're down to 12, possibly going to 9.
Because we've said it over and over again, we don't want this to be a counting game where you're just like, just looking around at the table and saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 3 of that. If that's what the game is, it's not going to be fun.
Which leads us into kind of the next section of our debrief where we talked about areas for adjustment. This was the space that we created for all the ideas that we asked people to hold off on during the playtest. This is the time that people were able to share more, less confined ideas about what to bring in or what to change or what they'd like to see in the game.
Jumping down to in that section, what I said, Mark, I had said, it's still counting. We don't have the animal or political feel. There could be a separate mechanic that controlled the turn order and priority. And I wrote at the bottom, need sabotage, hippos, kind of bringing us back to the beginning there, but I want hippos.
Some of the other prevailing feedback was we've talked a lot about as a team of bringing character cards into the game where players would have unique identities that granted them specific abilities that would affect the way that they're able to play and interact with voters and or other players. So that's kind of one of the things that we put as forefront for next steps.
Yeah, that was one of the original ideas, you know, when Ryan and I talked about the game way back when, and we've been really patient on putting that into the game, which I think is good, because I think trying to lead with that would have been challenging, but it's great to see that we're moving towards that and people think that is something that the game should have. Here's a note from I'm So Bad That I Know You're Going to Want to Talk About in a future episode is limitations of playing cards that I owe. That's something that Mark has brought up before that we need to talk about. It should be part of the show. we should be talking about how we're limited with what playingcards.io allows us to do. And we don't want that to be a hindrance when we're developing the game.
I think that's something that we're really going to want to think about carefully when we plan that show. I don't know. There's a space where, yes, playingcards.io limits what we're able to do in terms of having a board or the way that we're able to manipulate pieces or have different components in the game. The size of the window that we're able to play in is actually the most restrictive part in my limited experience in working with it. But there's also a space where it is a very effective platform for us. We have people that are very proficient using it. It is a flexible tool in a lot of ways. And with some imagination, I'm sure there are workarounds that will approximate the physical experience that we're going to be looking for as we move towards making a physical prototype, because I know you're chomping at the bit to start doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The last piece of the debrief kind of looked at some of the larger questions that are still kind of hanging over the game's head. What type of game is it? I hate to say what's the feel of the game. But there are questions about, is this going to be your social deduction political game in the terms of players competing and trying to socially outmaneuver one another? And those elements aren't in the game right now. And so there's a question that the team needs to collectively answer of, are those elements that we want to bring into the game? Or is the game something else at this point?
Mark is looking over at me. We've had this conversation. We've had this talk where, and that's why I said to Mark, you know, I don't care what it is, but Hippo should be in the game, because I have said, I'm open, I'm flexible. I know I have said, I might have been the first one to say it, that it's a social game. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's worker placement. I'm open to that. And I don't want to rule anything out at this point, but I understand how that sort of brainstorming also holds us back a little bit, because we don't know what ideas to use because we don't know what our game is yet. And we talked about it on the last show. We talked about it. We didn't answer it. We talked about, what do we want the game to feel like? And we put some ideas out there, but we've not locked into anything and said, this is what the game is. This mechanic doesn't work because it doesn't fit the theme. It doesn't fit how we want it to feel. So right now, anything is still open. If we want to make it a worker placement, let's do it. I'm open to that as long as there's hippos. I remember one of the things you even said to me a long time ago when worker placement came up was you said, well, that's not the theme. That's not the game you've been pitching, because that sounds like you'd have a campaign manager is running, you know, the worker placement and you're moving around people. That doesn't feel like you're the person campaigning.
That's true.
So that's why we can't do worker placement.
I don't care. I think worker placement is great. I'll be curious. I think we have a proposed agenda for our next group meeting or our next team meeting, of kind of going in and discussing a little bit of our gaming history, sharing a little bit about our thinking about games, what's interesting to us about games, to try to build a little bit more understanding among the group of where we're coming from in terms of our gaming experience and or design experience, and might help us merge kind of the collective thinking in a way that allows us to make some of those decisions collectively about what type of game it's going to be. I'll be curious to see what the team says kind of facing down the blank slate, because what it feels like to me when I've sat in the meetings and kind of listened to the discussions, it sounds very much like it's a large canvas, it's a blank canvas, and without choosing a color palette, a tone, a medium, without making any of those choices, we've left ourselves to kind of just float aimlessly, not aimlessly, but to float in a way that...
Well, I think you said it, I think you had me say it really well on Blue Sky. I asked the question that there's a lot of success stories, you said. You came to me and you said this. You said there's a lot of success stories with solo designers. But do you know of any indie teams that have collaboratively built and launched the game like the way we are? So we're 6 to 7 people working on this game. That's a lot different than even Leonie sitting in her room building Biome, right? I mean, it's way different. And shout out to Nick Bentley, who has already replied, Mark, a game designer with Underdog Games and somebody that I follow on Blue Sky, who's always putting out really good conversations about board game design. So he responded and he has said that Flat Out Games is somebody that maybe we could look into. These people who created Cascadia or Point Salad. But it's something for us to, it would be a really good, we keep talking about all these really great podcast episodes in the future, but to sit down and talk to a group of people who've already done what we're proposing to do, what we're going through with, you know, how to collaborate with, you know, a handful of other people would be a really great episode.
I agree.
This is a really great episode too.
It's exciting times.
No one believes you.
He doesn't like it.
No one believes you. You got, if you're going to use exciting, you know the rule. You got to mean it. You got to really mean it. And I didn't feel it. I'm sorry. Those are the rules.
I think this was a great first playtest for the year. We got some time to get our legs under us in the way that we were going to test last year. This playtest, we really were able to sit down, identify our objectives of what we were working on, play the game, look closely at the features and problems and questions that we were trying to address with the playtest. We took the time, we had the time and availability to assess how the playtest went. From a system perspective, I think it worked really well. And so it makes me optimistic about going forward into another playtest and the next one after that. Because I think two things kind of will have to happen, or two things will be happening concurrently. The game will be developing, but also the way that the group works together will be developing. And I think as the proficiency and fluency of working as a collaborative unit becomes stronger, the playtests will become more efficient, the ideas will become stronger, easier to flesh out, and the game will become stronger and stronger. I do think there's a strong component of the sum and the effort of the group, the effort of the group.
Well, if Tuckman was here, he'd be calling it Norman. We're working on the Norman.
Norman?
Storman? Norman? You've forgotten Tuckman?
I thought we left him in 2024.
We're bringing Tuckman with us. What would Tuckman do at all times?
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjoes, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. Just to clarify a little...
Let me do my deep voice here.
Just to clarify a little bit, the...
You can't do it while you're laughing.
I'm smiling.
But why? The audience is like, why is he smiling in the middle of the statement? They don't know the jokes that got cut.
They can't see me. How would they know I'm smiling? The same way they see my scare quotes?
Yeah.